Penguin Random House Audio presents River Sing Me Home by Eleanor Shearer. Read for you by Deborah Michaels. My aim in writing this novel was to bring to life a story about the Caribbean in the aftermath of slavery, a place and time that is not always well known or well understood. Doing this history justice was incredibly important to me, especially given my family ties to the Caribbean. To make this story as accurate as possible, I have chosen to use some terms, such as mulatto and negro, that are offensive to many people today, myself included. There are also characters who express deeply racist views, which were widespread at the time. I do not use these terms or write these characters to condone them, but I want readers to be clear-eyed about the extent of the brutality and oppression that enslaved people faced. As we excavate history through fiction, we can confront the injustices of our past as a way to shed light on our present and work toward a more equitable future. Eleanor Shearer. A voice is heard in Ramah, mourning and great weeping. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted, because they are no more. Jeremiah 31:15. Break a vase, and the love that reassembles the fragments is stronger than that love which took its symmetry for granted when it was whole. Derek Walcott, The Antilles, Fragments of Epic Memory. The soil on the island was fertile, but everything laid down shallow roots. When the hurricanes came, they ripped up even the sturdiest trees, and when the white men came, they tore children out of their mothers' arms. And so, we learned to live without hope. For us, loss was the only thing that was certain. Many of us had already lost one home, a home of deep roots and of ancestors delved down into history. Those roots did not save us. Those roots rotted in the hull of the slave ships, in darkness and filth. We had little left to plant in the new world, and whatever we had was the white men's for the taking. So we tried to live only on the island's surface. We planted cane, but nothing of our own. Mothers turned their heads when a baby was born, refusing to meet its eyes. We tried to glide through this half-life, this life without history or future, but our endless present had ways of stretching itself out, lying across time, until our lives had movement and color again. At night, we whispered stories to the children of old gods in our homelands, in a tongue the white men couldn't understand. Still, the hurricanes came. Still, the children were taken away and sold across the sea. But they were sold with a little seed inside them that sang to them of another life. Everything laid down shallow roots, but what couldn't go deep went wide, tapping the oceans, tunneling to the islands nearby, where others were also trying and failing to live without memory of yesterday or thought of tomorrow. Without roots, things die. Many of us did die at the hands of the white men or in the heat of the midday sun. The soil ran rich with our blood, and the roots fed on our bodies. It made the roots strong, shallow, but strong. There was hope for this new world, after all. Barbados, August 1834. Chapter 1. It was the blackest part of the night, and Rachel was running. Branches tore at her skin. Birds, screeching, took flight at the pounding of her strides. The ground was muddy and uneven, slick with the residue of recent rains, and she slipped, falling hard against the rough bark of a palm tree. She slid down to the soil, to where ants marched and beetles scurried and unseen worms burrowed through the earth. With ragged breaths, she gulped the heavy, humid air into her lungs. She could taste its dampness on her tongue, tinged with the acidic bite of her own fear. What had she done? She looked behind her. Looming in the darkness was the outline of the mill on Providence plantation, its arms splayed out like four sharp-edged daggers, marking an angry cross into the sky. Terror clawed at her throat, as if the mill itself had eyes and could whisper to the overseer what it had seen. It was not too late. She could still climb back over the wall and creep through the fields of half-planted cane, where gaping holes awaited young green stalks. She could return to her hut, one wooden square among many, and lie back on the sleeping mat that was worn thin from 40 years of use. She could wait for dawn and another day of labor. Scrambling to her feet, she kept running. Her legs plunged her deeper into the half-formed shadows of the forest. Her chest ached. She wanted to collapse, but could not. Her body, unbidden, carried her further and further away from Providence. Every snap of a twig sounded like a gunshot. The murmuring of cane toads became the distant cries of searching men. She must keep running. Alone, mud-streaked, with weariness sinking into her very bones, a question haunted her. Was this freedom? The empty forest, her fleeing, sick with dread. Was this what they had hoped for all along? The day before, all the slaves of Providence had gathered outside the great house. A stone-faced set of white people waited for them, the master on horseback, flanked by the overseer, with the master's wife and three children standing on the steps of the house. The white people stared at the slaves. The slaves stared back. They all knew what was coming. Some of the slaves even smiled. Rachel was among those who didn't. She was old enough to remember other times when there were whispers about the end of slavery. She would not believe it until she heard it for herself from the master's own mouth. The master's balding forehead glistened with sweat in the heat. As he brought his horse forward, Rachel caught a glimpse of his wife's face, her lips pressed into a line of seething contempt. It was this sight, more than anything, that weakened Rachel's resolve. She dared to hope. The master kept his remarks short. He told them that the king had decreed an end to slavery. As of the following day, the new Emancipation Act would come into effect. They were free. Some people cried. Others yelled and danced in delight. They were a mass of shouting, sweating bodies, a river bursting its banks. The master and the overseer barked useless orders, unable to be heard over the noise. Eventually, the master rode his horse through the crowd at a gallop, just to get them quiet again. Its hooves kicked one woman's head in, and she died instantly. But she died free. There was more, the master said. They were no longer slaves, but they were instead his apprentices. By law, they would work for him for 6 years. They could not leave. When the sun rose, Rachel and all the rest would be going back out to finish the planting. They would tend to the cane until the next harvest, and the harvest after. 6 years of cutting and planting and cutting again. Freedom was just another name for the life they had always lived. An ugly hiss went through the crowd. The overseer, gun slung over his shoulder, reached to bring it down. 100 pairs of eyes watched the arc of his hand. The master's horse blew air through its nostrils, its reins pulled taut. The hiss died, and the crowd was still. Rachel heard the news of hollow freedom in silence.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?